I'm speaking today with Larry Joe Daugherty, candidate for Congressional District 10. Larry Joe, first question I have is, why are you running for this particular race?
This country deserves representation that doesn't misrepresent their values and their interests. I love my country. You're going to hear Republicans challenging Democrats over the war issue up one side and down the other about not being patriotic, when in fact the opposite is true. I've represented people all my life, Charles. I made a career out of representing people. That's what a lawyer does. And you have a standard of care as a lawyer to put people's interests above your own. And I can tell from looking at the way we've been misrepresented that that hasn't happened. Michael McCaul is a rubber stamp for the president's agenda. Congress is supposed to be independent, exercise judgment as a check and a balance. When you're a personal yes man or certified goose-stepping get-along member of the Republican parade, you can't represent the interests of the people independently of a president that you've sworn allegiance to. They've got it all backwards, and we've got to change that. It's constitutionally required that our judiciary be independent, that our Congress be independent, and that the president have independent powers as well so they can serve as checks and balances. And today, we have lost the independence of Congress, and we've lost the independence of the judiciary. I can do something about it one at a time. And I'm going to do something about this one this time.
Since you mentioned the war, obviously that's been a big and contentious issue. What is your position on what should be done in Iraq?
Get out now. Start getting out now. Keep getting out till we get completely out.
Do you believe there should be any residual troops or troops moved nearby into like Kuwait?
Well, Our troops in Kuwait are there under a different authority than they're in Iraq. Whether and how many troops we maintain in other countries in the Middle East are separate issues from why we're in Iraq. We're not in Iraq because somebody asked us to come into that country. I think it's clear from reading Greenspan's book that we were there over oil. We invaded that country in order to control the Straits of Hormuz and the production of oil and the supply of oil. And what we've done was an uninvited invasion, and we do not need to establish an occupation force. We need to get out until we're there under proper authority. And that means with permission and consent of a duly authorized government. It's clear from what I'm reading in the reports from Iraq that we're part of the problem. We're not curing a problem by being there. And that by withdrawing from Iraq, we can contribute to the solution. And keeping an occupation force without permission, because we're powerful enough, is not the American standard.
Do we have any remaining responsibility to help get that country to a point where its government can function safely and continuously?
Our responsibility is to help, not hurt, and you're absolutely right. We need to engage that effort, though, with a diplomatic skill and tenacity that involves cooperative measures rather than punitive measures. And it may require additional money, though money is not going to solve all the problems we've caused. Our financial responsibility will linger on even after our troops have been removed.
And a domestic issue that's been big in the news lately is SCHIP, which has come up for votes numerous times in Congress, vetoed repeatedly by the president. Congress has not quite been able to override that veto to expand SCHIP for the states. What is your opinion of all this?
That's a prime example of how the citizens in District 10 have suffered because Michael McCaul has been taking orders from a Republican agenda that doesn't emanate from the dictates of his constituency. he should be following the lead of what the people in his district want and need, and they're not getting it. His denial of SCHIP benefits for poor children in Texas, while at the same time taking a government-paid-for, federally-funded health insurance program as a part of his job as a U.S. congressman, is inconsistent with fair play, justice, and common sense. I've called on Michael McCaul to disavow his access. He's the 10th richest congressman in the United States and richest member of the Texas delegation. He could afford to provide his own insurance. He doesn't have to live on government insurance as a congressman, but they haven't done it. I've sent him a letter before the last SCHIP vote that pointedly said it's the health care, stupid, and we got no response other than what we expected. That is, he voted against it again. I don't think any congressman should rest easy in this health care system that's predicated on insurance benefits being available in order to get health care until they're able to provide health care benefits to all of the poor people, all of the children especially in our country that don't have it. Good, competent health care should be a birthright, and so should a clean drink of water.
Let's talk about a clean drink of water. Are you referring to something in specific? What do you have in mind with that?
It's what I call the hidden issue, Charles. It's perhaps the biggest issue in this campaign, but it's obscured by the war. It's obscured by the economy. Obviously, the war and the economy are inextricably intertwined. We can't face it as a dual problem. It's a one problem with two heads. We wouldn't have been in the war in all reasonable likelihood and probability if we'd have paid a little better attention to the environment. We've had an agenda in the United States of using the earth to develop and manage our resources, oil, cattle, minerals, water. And what we fail to do is to recognize that the environment really requires us to use our resources to manage the earth. And we're going to be facing water shortages as population demands approach the year 2015. They're going to make our problems with dependence on oil seem minuscule, because we have alternatives to our dependence on oil. We don't have alternatives to providing a clean drink of water. And if we don't get our environmental prerogatives or imperatives correct and straight soon and begin to manage our resources to develop the earth, the abundant supply of clean drinkable water and the abundant supply of water necessary to irrigate our crops to provide our food supplies are going to be imperiled. And this is something that is just not at the forefront of the political issues in this campaign. And I think it should be. I don't think it should be fear-mongering or scare tactics. I think it should be factually stated that we've got a problem that we're going to have to address with proper open space land management. And that aspect of our future needs is hasn't reached critical mass on the political radar screen.
Well, right now the federal government is suing a number of landowners along the Texas-Mexico border for access to their land so that they can do surveying for the border fence. Can you tell me a little bit about what your position is on the border fence in specific and immigration in general?
The border fence is an obscenity. We don't need a fence. We don't need to face the prospect someday that the president of Russia will stand on the steps of the state capitol and say, "Mr. President, take down that wall." But we're laying the predicate for the same sort of foolishness that's been a failed effort to control what is a social migration issue. And it's not going to be controlled by a fence. More than landowners' eminent domain rights are at stake in that issue. The natural free flow of the ecology, the animals, and the environment of the land itself is at stake in trying to construct that fence along the border. And that's a force issue that should be dealt with differently. We have a strong magnet into the United States on jobs available that people are coming here to get because they can't find employment or adequate earnings at home. There's this security issue involved, but if we deal with quantifying the and identifying the people who are here to get a job and to deal with the immigration issues without fear-mongering and without race-baiting, without the first order of defense being a threat that you're going to be thrown in jail if you participate rather than cooperate and identify, we can begin to quantify the problem and get a grip on identifying where the problem is and how it can be addressed. We don't have compliance with our laws. Do we have 12 million so-called undocumented workers, illegal aliens? One way it sounds real bad, the other way it sounds like just a matter of getting the documents put together. Or do we have 38 million illegal immigrants and or 38 million undocumented? The fact that we can track down the one mad cow found in the United States with the documentation we have either suggests that the Department of Agriculture should be put in charge of documenting aliens in this country, or that somebody is blowing smoke at us about the willingness to adhere to law. I frankly think that we have sufficient laws, especially since the 1986 changes that were made, to document the issues and identify the people if there was a willingness. But it tells me that if, let's just assume the worst, or the most, that there's 38 million undocumented workers in America. In order for them to be here and to successfully stay here, there's some complicit number of legal Americans born in the United States who are assisting in that process. So do we have 50 million or more scofflaws, anarchists? That is a conscious effort to ignore the law. And if we do, that's not a problem that we're going to solve just by chunking money at it. We can't afford the expense of trying to round everybody up and send them home. That's foolish and impractical. We've also demonstrated that some of the efforts in the desert were foolishness. I think there's some fraud, perhaps even graft at stake. I read a report that we spent $40 million on high-tech electronic surveillance equipment to night vision spot the illegal aliens as they crossed the border. But somebody forgot that there's no electricity in the Texas desert. So we wasted $40 million in technological advances. Those mechanical approaches to a social phenomenon without dealing with the root causes of food, cost of corn, the availability of it in Mexico, and the Mexican farmers' ability to compete in a market where we have price subsidies through our farm bill is part of the push. The availability of jobs in the United States is part of the pull. And so the phenomenon of people being pushed across the border or pulled into the United States by what's attractive to them as the American dream shouldn't come as a shock to us, but we ought to be able to document the problem and recognize that we're going to have something like 50 million baby boomers leaving the job market. And the need to fill that void with educated workers. So education is part of the problem, and or part of the solution to the replacement of a trained workforce in America. And the statistics I've been reading suggest that less than half that amount are going to be available from the homegrown workforce to fill that void. So workers are going to need to come from somewhere. We've only recently experienced a downturn in the economy, the beginning of a recession signaled by a slight increase in unemployment, maybe not necessarily in Texas, but in other parts of the United States. So it doesn't seem to me that the influx of undocumented workers have filled a void in our workforce that has pushed any qualified Americans out of a job, though we may be beginning to feel that with some recessive downturns in the economy in the near future.
Since we're talking about the economy, what's your opinion of the stimulus package that has been voted on by Congress?
Are you talking about Wall Street or the Main Street? The stimulus or the effort to fix the subprime mortgage debacle on Main Street is as significant a part of trying to get the economy stimulated, I think, as reducing the Fed rate. For some reason or other, it looks like the first three-quarter reduction they made wasn't good enough, so they did another half. We're going to have to see what the response is. For every intended consequence of those laws, there's always the potential for the unintended consequence. And if that stimulus package isn't A, spent in America or to stimulate our economy, or B, plowed into savings to bail out a debt that has already been incurred by stimulating the economy by the consumer borrowing, it may not have the intended consequence of kickstarting an upturn from the recession. We're just going to have to wait and see.
This district, District 10, stretches from Austin to Houston. Goes from, you know, a fairly urban part of the state to a suburban part of the state with a lot of rural areas in between.
Yeah.
How do you represent such a large, diverse district as that?
Well, oddly enough, we may have already touched on what I think the common denominator of interest is, and that's water. You represent the district by listening and trying to determine if there's a consistent consensus in what the public wants. It's difficult. It's what a congressman is supposed to do in terms of mediating and compromising. And as a trial lawyer, every case involved dealing with compromise, and almost all cases went to some form of mediation where you had to sit and listen to the interests of the other party discussed in a non-adversarial setting. Taking those skills to Congress are uniquely within the purview of my 37 years experience in the practice of law on this planet. The Trans-Texas Corridor is a prime example of those kind of divergent interests. There's some very hostile interests in certain counties, but not all the counties. And outside the district, there's the same hostility and acceptance variable as you go along the proposed Trans-Texas Corridor. And getting something worked out where the fair construction of what's actually needed without corruption and ripoff is not easy, but that's what the job of a congressman is to figure out what those interests are and to represent and explain and communicate.
You've talked about your experience as a trial lawyer, but you've also spent some time as a judge on a TV show, Texas Justice, I believe it was called.
Texas Justice was the first nationally syndicated television show ever produced in Houston, Texas.
How do people react when they find out that you're that guy from that show?
Well, when you realize that people who watched the show are fans, because nobody watches television they don't like. You may have heard about stuff you don't watch, but you don't have much of an opinion about it if you haven't seen it. people who actively watched a television show did so because they liked it. Those are called Nielsen ratings. The higher they are, the more fan acceptance there is. I haven't had any negative reaction from people who've watched the show.
And from people who are only now hearing about it, how do they react?
It depends on whether or not they have an agenda or just a simple curiosity, but almost everybody asks the same question. How did you get that job?
Yeah, well, I can see that.
So that's the curiosity part.
All right. You have an opponent in the March primary for the nomination for November. On March 4th, when people go to the polls, vote in the primary, why should they vote for you to be the nominee for Congressional District 10?
Experience in representing people, the ability to put somebody's interest above your own, is an ethical standard required of a lawyer who represents people. It's called a fiduciary duty. We haven't gotten that kind of representation in Congress. It may be something that's so foreign to our experience as citizens that we don't, in our jaded sense of what we expect from congressmen, think that we can have it. But I know how to do that because that's a part of our practice. My wife is a lawyer. She and I established a chair in legal ethics at the University of Houston because of our commitment to the responsibility of ethical conduct. I'm the candidate that's going there to do something, not to be something.
Okay. Larry Joe Daugherty, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming back.